We do the little Wayne's World thing in the beginning. So in 5, 4. Hey guys, how's it going? Nick Campbell here, and with me as always is
David Steele.
And we are
Rhythm and Wit. Hey. Yeah, this is episode 47. This is a special episode. This podcast is the podcast where we discuss and explore the creative and artistic expressions of artists and performers in Oklahoma City. And now, from outside of Oklahoma City, we have a special guest, Ren Q.
What's up, pal? Thanks for having me. That was so fun to watch.
Yeah. Both,
like, that was really, I don't know if people could like just listen to this podcast,
yeah,
but
right.
if you can't see... that was really adorable.
Thanks. We haven't done that specific kind of intro. I mean, that's fairly new, I guess. I mean, but yeah, the whole saying it together. I guess it's probably been about a year, maybe. But we've been doing this podcast for a couple years at least now.
Wow.
Trying.
I mean,
veterans,
this is kind of
in the podcast.
This
world.
Feels like our second season. I heard saying before we started about your second season of the show, and we've definitely moved and it's evolved, you know, from the first year until now. But yeah, welcome. Thanks for coming.
Yeah. Yay. Thanks. So happy to be here.
So where'd you come from? How'd you get here?
I got here by car.
Yeah.
Got here by Subaru.
You're on tour.
And by way of Subaru. And I was in Denver, which is where I live. And I got to be home for the last like month-ish or so. And I'm home for another kind of 2 weeks, except for a little cool, you know, kind of weekend things like this. And then we are back out on the road on tour again. So
how long are you running? How long have you been running since before?
Oh my gosh. We really kicked. I had been doing kind of a couple shows on the West Coast at the beginning of the year. So, but I don't necessarily technically count that as tour, but I've been on the road since like February.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Pretty much all year, huh? Yeah. Kind of with small breaks in there. Yeah.
Yes.
That's great.
But I love it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I love to travel.
Yeah. Getting to see new places. I guess what's kind of one of the most exciting places you've been to so far?
Oh, my gosh.
There's
so many cool things. Big love for Memphis.
Oh, nice.
Big love for Louisville. Big love for Provincetown, Massachusetts. Those have all been like really fun, like unexpectedly fun.
That's
like the
nice.
People, like the, and it's like the people, like really, you know, when like you kind of show up to a random town, you don't know anybody, and then suddenly everyone is just like, oh, well, we're just going to show you right around town. We picked you up a slice of pizza before they closed, and now we're going to go pop to 8 bars. And I'm just like, wow, this is amazing. y'all really know how to treat a guy.
Yeah,
you know?
That's nice.
So,
that's
yeah,
cool.
No, big love to all those spots.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of fun. I saw that you went by Tulsa.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
And that's when I was looking up your stuff. I was like, oh, man, this is awesome. The OK joke got me.
Bless. I'm so glad. You know what? That's like one of my favorite jokes I've ever written.
Yeah.
And I was like an early one that I wrote, too. And I like to throw it in. And like for a year, no one laughed at that joke. Like no one. And then it started getting pops, and now it's like an A joke. Like it works for every crowd for some reason.
Cool.
And I'm like, it was like really nice to be like, okay, like we're testing the, you know, Oklahoma joke on Oklahoma, right?
Yeah,
we're going to see if you like it. I don't know. And they were like, oh, yeah, that's us. And I was like, cool.
I feel like Oklahoma has a fairly good sense of humor about itself or, you know, the people here. Mm-hmm. It's like, I don't know. Everyone's laid back. This is such a laid back city, I feel like, or the population.
Yeah. That's nice.
Well, I'm a sucker for just sweet, cute jokes.
Yeah.
So like when there was like a, I don't even remember. It was like a meme from a long time ago, and it was a tiny little red chili. And I was just laying in bed next to my wife, and I was just like, it said, "Man, this thing is cute." And somebody put underneath it. It's like, "Man, that looks like it's a little chili."
Yeah.
And I just bust 12 o'clock at night, you know, in bed,
silly.
Just like. Bah!
I love
that.
Like, you gotta
She's
check
like,
those
can
out.
You please leave me the fuck alone? Yeah. But yeah, I love little cute jokes like that. Sweet. My mom was like that. She was, well, Lori was, and I was adopted by my grandparents. But like Lori was, she was fucking crazy. She loved little. She was a cheese ball, you know. She was about as my biological mom, but she was like, I love cheesy guys, and so I just grew up to be one.
Yeah,
so.
that's the most precious origin story I've ever
hear
heard.
That Liz, precious, not annoying, but yeah. But I saw you, and I was like, oh, this is fun, and you had come by Tulsa, and I was like, man, I want to see. I'm just going to reach out. Just a shot in the dark.
Yeah.
And, so glad you did.
And you're, yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, it was great. Yeah, it's great.
Denver's not terribly far. Like I was telling you before earlier, my sister lives there. It's like, what, 10 hour, 8 hours?
Yeah, it's like an audiobook and a half.
Yeah. You know? It's like you can get there and, like, you know, start in the morning, get there by, you know.
Bingo.
Yeah, late in the evening. But
yeah. No, it was lovely. And it was nice. I did, like, a little digging into, I was just like, oh, I know nothing about Oklahoma City. So right. I was like coming in blind. So I was just like, okay, what's the, I'm like, what are we known for? What is going on here? And like ChatGPT was not very helpful. I know, I was trying to like not text and drive. So I was like, dear ChatGPT, tell me everything to know about Oklahoma City. And then somehow that conversation evolved into me being like, were there any gay pirates?
That's usually how it evolves.
That's right. Standard comedian train of thought. but I did find out that Oklahoma's state bird is the scissor-tailed zipper catcher.
Mm-hmm. Well, scissor-tailed fly catcher, I guess. But I don't know if that's a different name for it or something.
I literally was like, are you kidding me? That's like the gayest thing I've ever heard in my life. Like, lesbian icon, the scissor-tailed zipper catcher. Are you kidding me? Like,
there's this statue kind of thing. It's like this architectural, it's like over this bridge. It's near downtown. You might see it but it's supposed to be shaped like that, but it's this weird, like,
like ethereal bird bridge shape.
Well, it's got its legs in the air.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, like, it, and you can walk underneath the bridge. So...
Okay.
Yeah. And it's all multicolored. Right. Okay. Tonight, so it's like, we're leaning.
You're like, we're like, yes, we leaned in architecturally. Right. Yeah. That's fantastic.
So you start with the art, and then it's how you introduce it.
Okay. Well, now I'm going to go have to take a little cute photo.
It's, it's around downtown.
I mean, it's
too.
Massive, though. It's like very large over this bridge. But yeah, it's like I said, just south of downtown. So it's not too far from where we'll be later tonight.
I just got a new, like, little camera, and it's just it's probably just the cruddiest 35 millimeter camera that money could buy. I'm thrilled to now just be in like my old man taking photos of the places he goes era.
Like around your neck.
That's great. I think that's
got the little wrist loop on it, you know. Yeah. Like,
that's one of the best things.
Somebody hit the flash with a lighter.
that's right. Like a dad on a cruise, you know.
Can you hold this?
That's one of the best things that I think for if you're on a traveling or touring of any kind to have a camera and you have this whole like photo. I know there's a musician, the guitar player for the Police. I think it's Andy Summers. Anyways, you know, the Police, they've been on tour all over the place, and he got into photography at one point. I remember watching a documentary about them, but he turned into like very, very great a photographer, you know, hobbyist, but then ended up with this whole gallery of photos of like them on tour. So that's like a cool thing that, you know, a hobby for that goes along with touring so well.
Yeah, I think so too. And also, I think it's so special to when we have performers on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Like, of course, you know, like we pay everybody, and you know, we try to make sure that they're taken care of. But like at the same time, I think that, like, I don't know, there's nothing quite like a handwritten note. You know what I mean? Everybody loves a little handwritten note. Love to like just do a little, you know, thank you. And like if I have a photo that is like an actual film developed photo of them, I try to do a digital copy for myself, and then I give them.
Oh yeah,
and that's such a cool little thing to like see yourself in front of a marquee on like a old Polaroid, you know, like from like months ago. And like, I'm like,
that's something that's coming back as those Polaroid cameras. They're like remaking new ones. Instant cameras. We are now taking donations for to help support Rhythm and Wit. It's called buymeacoffee.com/rhythmandwit, and that is where you can go and just donate any number, any amount. I think that what they do is it's called Buy Me a Coffee. You can buy us one cup of coffee. It costs $5. So you can just donate $5, and that will maybe buy one of us a coffee.
So we'll sip on it together.
We'll split it. So you can do that, or you can buy us 10 cups of coffee if you wanted to. So, I mean, that's like a $50 donation, and then that's all goes there. You can leave us a message on there, and if you do leave us a message, we will certainly read it on the air, and thank you for your support. And any of the money that we take from Buy Me a Coffee or any donations at all, we are going to use to put back in the show, whether it's buying new equipment, maybe some mics or cameras or lights or or anything like that, or maybe even promoting and just trying to grow the audience, because that's something that I'd like to get into, is, you know, buying some ads and things like that to try to grow our audience that way.
Absolutely.
And of course that costs money, so we would love it if you could support us. If you have the means, please go to buymeacoffee.com/rhythmandwit. Rhythm and wit.
Well, I definitely brought you on for selfish reasons. I'm going to put that. Right. For me, I'm just, I want to figure out how you put the tour together. Is that, can we kind of dive into that a little bit?
Yeah, no, I mean, I'll give you the play-by-play. Yeah. It truly is just one email at a time. Like, really. It's emails, and then I would say, like, social media is kind of, like, 30% of it, of, like, reaching out to folks on those
like
platforms.
Because
it's really, like, how do I get in contact with these people? If I can get in contact with them, I can get an answer, and the answer is either yes or no. And so it's just kind of a numbers game of, like, how much do I need to put out there to make that work? I've been really blessed to have this kind of incorporated with queer community, which are great community builders, right?
Yeah.
And then also not being closed-minded to venues. Like, obviously, theaters are great, and obviously, comedy clubs are great. But we've performed at, you know, a pizza bar that speakeasies as a drag bar. And we performed at, like, a cool coffee shop, and we performed at a print shop in L.A. And it was like they were literally making T-shirts in the back, and we're doing comedy up front, and it was really neat. And those were just kind of community spaces that were willing to have us, right? And we're certainly within our budget, right? Which was nice when we
So do you have to rent the place out, kind of?
It totally depends. Yeah. Some places give it to us for free because we are, you know, kind of fundraising oriented, right? And so that's like their contribution. If they are a bar, usually they're like, if we make, you know, $300, $400, $500 in bar sales, then like whatever, great.
Yeah.
You can have it for free. If not, then we'll take a cut. Ticket splits are my preferred because I think that everybody benefits. I really love to get like a 20 to 80 or 30 to 70 ticket split with like 20 to 30 going to the venue, and like we get to keep the other like, you know, 70% or so. And some places are just like, just give us $400. And I'm like, okay. And, you know, hopefully we recoup that back and then some. So that's been kind of the pricing around it. When you get a ticket split, it's nice because there's just no upfront cost that you have to cover, right? So that's like kind of the ideal piece of that. And sometimes there's like, you know, deposits and whatever. But for the most part, I think that especially being nonprofit and fundraising centered, that gives us a little bit of, not like to say a competitive edge, but like it's really convenient because a lot of places will donate their space or
That's
give
nice.
Us a discount or, you know, whatever for that, which makes it a little bit easier. And then also sometimes those community spaces have performance spaces, right? And so the nonprofit partners that we would have, so the good example of this is the LGBTQ Center of Western Montana and the Transformation Project in South Dakota. They have kind of a little performance space. And so we get to basically just split 50-50 with them because we're donating 50% of the proceeds from the show to the nonprofit.
Okay.
So when it is just at the nonprofit, then suddenly there's no venue cost on top of it.
Also, I was going to ask, is there a specific organization that you donate portions of the sales too?
So we do a different, for the most part, a different organization everywhere that we go. We want to do like local, we want to like focus on kind of local nonprofits.
Okay, so yeah, that's good. So wherever you're at, it's kind of you're giving to that
exactly
area.
Yeah, so like give back to that spot. And that's been really neat to also get to meet so many cool people doing great work out there. And a lot of it is like almost single-handed. Like there's really great, the Transgender Resource Center of New Mexico and the Harriet Hatcher Center in Columbia, South Carolina. They're really small organizations and they are doing so much. It is wild.
Like, no
like they're like helping like hundreds and hundreds of people in the community in a small place, you know, with zero support. And so to me, you know, when we're able to donate like $400 around, you know, for, like that's a, like an average donation that we get to make. And we've donated up to like 2,000 in one show, which is really awesome
that's
for a great
fantastic.
Turnout. But when we have those kind of smaller donations where it's just a couple $100, I like, you know, not to say I feel bad, but I'm just like, you know, I wish I could give more.
Right.
And I've had folks be like, no, 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 you don't understand. This will cover operations costs for us for the next like 2-3 months.
Yeah,
and I'm like, this is $400. Are you kidding me?
Yeah,
you were running
like
off of shoestring.
Yeah. They don't get any, I'm sure hardly anywhere near those amounts, you know, on a daily or monthly basis.
Exactly. So, it was really cool to kind of get to partner with those organizations. And also we benefit get from that in their newsletter lists. Mm-hmm. And they have community that comes to events, and they have folks that are, you know, kind of involved. And so being able to kind of get those folks as ticket buyers has been really, really helpful.
Yeah, because it's kind of automatic, you know, community that you can reach out to sell to. I mean, market to. This is like, they're always looking for opportunities for like a safe place they could, they know it, they can go and be entertained.
Exactly. So kind of providing, a safe space, a space that is kind of highlighting like our own performers and our community. And then it's like for a good cause, you know, like literally half your ticket is going to like better the community that you live. Right. Mm-hmm. So, so it's been for the most part kind of different organizations state by state and, venue wise, that's like how we kind of made it work. And it really is just a numbers game. Like sometimes we would, I reached out to, you know, maybe like three places in all of, you know, like Louisiana and like all of like, you know what I mean? I'd reach out to like three spots in New Orleans. And then I had like one person reach out to me and was just like, I own a venue in New Orleans and we would love to have this. And I'm like, great. Right. And so there's like places where that's super easy. Yeah. And then, Maine. I don't know why. They were so hard. They were the hardest state to book.
Really?
Yeah. And a lot of times I was like, is this transphobia? Like, what's going on?
Yeah. Right.
Like, what's happening? And sometimes, yes. Right. Yeah. And sometimes, no. I think that moreover, they're just like, we don't like outsiders around here.
It's like, I don't care who you are.
Yeah. They literally were like, I had places be like, yeah, we find that like out of town acts don't do well here. And I was like, how many people do you even have in Portland, Maine? Right. Like, you know, like, come on.
You don't want to take up Ed's spot.
I know. It's so strange. So I reached out to, over 30 venues in here before we got one yes from a cute little random pub called the East Ender. And they were like, we don't really do stuff like this and we don't really have a stage, but we would love this. And I was like, great. 10 out of 10. Awesome. We will bring the equipment. Thank you so much. Great. I'm so happy to have a venue.
So do you have equipment with you? You kind of just take around?
Yeah. I mean,
so you just make it all happen too.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. We were just kind of talking earlier about how comedy is low production and that is a blessing, right? Where it's like, I really do only need like a mic and an amp. And usually venues have that, which is great. But so when I have it, I really enjoy having the backup. Plus, like, pro tip to anybody in comedy, like, get yourself an okay amp and an okay mic and just keep it in your car, because I have saved the day of so many comedy shows that I am not on.
Yeah.
And that gives you such good cred.
Yeah.
To be the homie that like showed up and was like, they brought the working amp after we forgot our cord.
Because the cords. Yeah. That's the most important part.
It's always the cords.
Because you're not going to go, you can't go to a Guitar Center at 7 o'clock at night. I mean, where? Who else sells cords? I mean, I think Target does.
Yeah.
Sells cords. Nobody sells cords. You're just
like,
right now.
You go to Best Buy and you're like, oh, do you have this aux
cable?
Yeah, and nowadays it's like the PAs and stuff. There's so much of the technologies that advanced to where it's like you can get like a really loud amp, you know, that's not even very heavy, you know, or very big, so you can keep it in your trunk or whatever.
Yes.
Home Depot has the job site amps, it's just like, I mean, those maybe work. A piece of string to like a cup, and then it's like kind of thing that looks like an old DeWalt radio.
Yeah.
It's just, I would work construction for a long time, so you would hear safety stuff from those, and they don't work. No, you're just like, I can ignore this. This is good. This goes with my coffee really well. But now I was curious. So you look for venues. When you're looking for venues, do you have like a seat kind of account that you're looking for?
Yeah, it really has been quite variable. We started out averaging around like, you know, kind of 40, 50 people a show. And now we're averaging closer to like 100, which is amazing.
Hey, congrats.
Thank you. Yeah. You know what I mean? A lot of times I'm just like, how did we pull 100 people in Boise, Idaho?
Yeah.
I don't know anyone in Boise,
exactly.
Idaho. Like,
that's
and,
do you think it's the community?
I don't know. I've been running this kind of in how I saw people run kind of like garage style shows back in the early 2000s, which was
for, like,
literally
music?
Sending out
is
like
that
a single email to be like, hey, this random D&D group, hey, this random therapist office, hey, this random organization that does HIV/AIDS prevention, hey, this random like PFLAG, hey, every single PFLAG in the state, would you like a discount code? We would love for you to come see this show. And I like send out about 50 of those emails per location.
Do you really?
Yeah. And I just do like a little personal reach out to be like, love your work, thanks for what you do in the community, here's a discount code, we would love to laugh with you. People really show up. Like, we had like 100 people come to our show in Reno, Nevada, and like I don't know anybody in Reno. Mm-hmm. I ain't never been to Reno. And homies came out in droves, and it was literally like, shout out to like the one P flag mom that like sent, you know, put that on the newsletter list and was like, yeah, every mom of the P flag is coming in all of like Northern Nevada is coming to the
That's
show.
That's beautiful. I love that.
Yeah, it's been really effective.
So how much do you usually sell your tickets at then?
We try to just price it 20.
That's good. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just a 21 ticket. That's a good night's entertainment.
And right that there. Way we can also, like, if we do a discount for folks, like, and get them down to, like, kind of 15, then that's I feel like, really doable. Mm-hmm. And I really have a mentality around, I mean, this is kind of old school from when I was doing, like, theater, but, like, if you have a $20 bill, that's a ticket. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And, like, that feels, like, not a huge, huge expense when you're, like, when it's a good show. And I think anything more than that, even I'm like, God, man, that's multiple bills. Yeah. I don't know, you know.
I could get a whole sub from Jimmy John's.
That's right. That's a 24-inch pizza there. Exactly. You know, so I think that, we try to kick it at $20. Yeah. But I also have a personal policy, if I can swing it with, like, the venue, to just never turn anybody away. And I think that is, like, I have 100% of the time that has paid itself back, if that makes sense. Where, like, we let in someone do a show for free, and then they end up telling a bunch of their friends, and, you know, those friends come to, like, the next three shows. Mm-hmm. Or, like, we've literally had, like, double shows where people show up and are like, oh, I don't have any money. And then they literally, like, go and come back and then give us, like, that and stay for another show.
Nice.
And so they'll, like, actually, like, pay the ticket after the because they had such a good time. And, like, that's so cool, you know? And I think that really speaks to me into that, like, I think that art should be free, and I think that, like, it is hard to do that. Mm-hmm. And so when we are able to kind of, like, give it away in love, usually I think it comes back to us in love, too.
That's awesome. Yeah.
So the tour is Here to Pee.
That's right. Yeah. Here to pee. Yeah. Here to pee, there to pee, everywhere to pee.
So how many near the goal is to go to all 50 states?
That's correct.
Where are you at now?
We are 27 states plus DC, which isn't a state, and that feels rude.
It's like it's gonna be 51, but
I really didn't know that DC wasn't a state until I started doing this.
Yeah,
and
I guess
then
I thought
there, and I was like, that's 26, and they're like, no, and I was like, what?
Yeah, I thought it was a part of the 50.
That doesn't feel right. I'm like, I don't know. Anyway, I'm like, Rhode Island's a state in D.C. sorry, Rhode Island. but yeah, we're 27 states so far, and then we have 17 coming up in August, and then we kind of finish out in November with like southern states. So
you've got every state booked already.
Everything but Mississippi.
Okay, is that the last holdout?
Mississippi's the last holdout, but we also, that one has been, I haven't reached out to nearly as many venues in like Mississippi as I did Maine, because they're a little bit farther out, and then also we had a personal connection, so like if there was an ability for that to pull through, then like it would be worth waiting for. But regardless, honestly, the South like kind of booked itself. Like my prejudice around the country has been very much flipped in that I think a lot of folks think that southern states are redder and are meaner and are going to be harder for queer comedians and performers in general. And I have had the very opposite to be the truth.
How was Tulsa? Tulsa was good.
Tulsa was great. We were at the Starlight. They were lovely.
Oh, yeah.
They were super lovely. Gorgeous little space. It was so cool.
Did you get to meet any local comics there?
Oh, my gosh, I did. And I'm going to blank on their names.
I was curious because we know a bunch of people up there.
Laura Cook does stuff up there. Yes. And Brett Jeffries.
Yeah. And I want a lovely guy that I want to call Glenn, but I don't know if that's his name. But no, homies were great. Yeah. And it was really cool because we had about 50 people. And then people would kind of like go in and out. And then every time someone would leave, we would have like two more people come in. And so that was really cool to have like basically a standing room only show that I thought was going to be sparsely attended. So that was really, really lovely. And also just such a like a cute little spot. I don't know. Like it was gorgeous. We had a really beautiful sunset.
Yeah.
And like the vibe outside was really nice. Folks were like hanging out and like smoking and talking to each other. And like that's always just a good feeling when you can laugh with folks and then you don't just go back to being strangers right after.
Right. Yeah. I think Tulsa is, we talk about this a lot, but just being Oklahoma City and Tulsa are the two biggest cities in Oklahoma. So but Tulsa is a much more kind of open for like art and community, I feel like, for music for sure, and comedy even. I mean, there's a huge, huge comedy scene there.
Like two clubs.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's been... So, yeah, anytime we get a chance to go up there for anything, it's always super fun. They have the Blue Whale Comedy Festival.
That's right.
Coming up soon. Yeah.
It's are you going to that?
Amazing.
No, I am not this busy. Year. I was going to say we're a touch busy.
Yeah, you should try it soon. I mean, in the next...
2026.
Next year. That'd be incredible.
Yeah.
I love that. So how do you promote these? How far ahead do you like to book them in order to promote them? And what gives you enough space and time?
Oh, my God. Book them as they come. When I can get them, right? We did it kind of in chunks to do, like, Western states, Eastern states, Northern states, Southern states.
Keep focus on one region.
Bingo. So I kind of have, like, a chunk to focus on. But usually I'll do, like, kind of a wave of inquiries for, like, everything that I have left. And at the same time, we'll do kind of double that labor on what is upcoming. So if I'm like kind of, you know, we were finishing up like the Eastern leg, and I was like, okay, I really have to finish booking the Northern leg. And it was like about 2 months between, and I really try to get tickets out a month at least before the show is.
Yeah.
As much as I can.
Trying to start promoting at least a month out.
Exactly. Right. And then socials, we put out a poster 2 weeks until, so it gives people enough time, but it's not like off the radar because it's like, well, that's a whole month away.
So about 2 weeks away, pump it up.
Yeah, we'll do kind of like an announcement at least a month beforehand to be like, this is where we're going, and then doing kind of individual like, what's up, like, South Dakota, hello, we are coming to you, like, please share that, you know, whatever. And that's
about
that
the Facebook
weeks.
Groups kind
of I'll go to kind of different Facebook groups of just like events, comedy, queer stuff, you know, etc. And then with kind of direct email reach out, that's where we get like the most of our, I'd say, kind of good return on ticket sales. And so for that, it's literally like, like I was saying, any support group, any, you know, kind of or community organization, inviting employees of organizations that work at those places to come laugh, to be like, we know that you're working so hard, you deserve a little giggle, come giggle. And so that's pretty effective. And then, of course, you know, just hopeful that, you know, local performers also help promote it. And we do just genuinely make the ask, because we can't do social media ads. We get all of our ads are blocked because of Meta's policies. So even if it doesn't mention anything super queer or trans, they know us at this point. And so we've just been auto-flagged.
That sucks.
Yeah, and so we can't do that. We can sort of sneak past that through Eventbrite ads if we're running tickets on Eventbrite, you know, which is nice, but not always the case.
So they block those intentionally? Like, I didn't even know that.
Too political.
They can just throw it in that bucket of like...
Yeah, or like misinformation, or like someone flagged this or whatever, which is silly because it's just like, well, it's just a little rinky-dinky comedy show. Yeah. You really think this is going to change the outcome of an election? Okay. I mean, hopefully. Flattering, honestly. But so we don't get to do ads that way. And so at the end of every show, I usually make the verbal ask of folks to be like, hey, like... We've been so blessed with good turnouts, and we know that that is not because of our social media presence right now, fam. So if you liked this show, this is where we're going next. Tell your people. That's been really effective. Because usually homies in Indy know someone in Detroit.
Yeah.
Homies in Detroit know someone in Madison. Right. Homies in Madison know someone in Des Moines. And like, it kind of just builds.
Nice. So very DIY, very old school.
Yes.
I like that.
It's been working, which is cool.
I'm glad to hear it.
Yeah, that's something we talk all the time about, marketing and how to get people to come out and stuff like that. And it's
so
like, it seems like that's what I keep saying. It's like, I've never personally never spent money on ads for anything, like social media ads, like Facebook or whatever. I mean, you do all the time, but you
don't see the return.
That's the thing. That's my opinion. Is like it's not worth it at all. Like it's just not.
And at least it makes me feel like I do.
Yeah, it's
well, like if they see you in five different places.
Yeah.
Yes.
So it's like, oh, so I'm here, so I'm there, so I'm there. So all right,
it's like they can have an effect. I just think it's not as big of an effect that you think or you want, of course.
Yes.
But I think that's the thing, is like the most effective thing is meeting people in person, talking to them about what you do.
Well, that's what I tried to do for this one. I was calling businesses and then going out and talking to people, and tried to do a different approach like that, because normally I would just, you know, hit up the people that I have. I've been doing this for about 2 years now, as far as producing. I've only been doing comedy for like 3 years.
Same. And,
oh, really? Hey, yeah. Congrats.
I got you.
Yeah. But me and my wife kind of put these shows together, and we really just reach out to the... I got a Husky Boy fan club, you know?
It's oh, like, yeah. So you have a mailing list.
Yeah. And they're probably pretty tired of me. So I just, you know, hey, come out, get free wine. You know? Just like,
yeah.
But we try to do a little bit in that way, but I think I kind of figured it out now, because I did that for like 3 weeks. Because I run, I do a bunch of different shows. I probably should stop, but
slow down a little bit.
Yeah, figured it out. I went and got flyers, and I would roll up to places, and I'd be like, "Hey, for this other show I do at the Bamboo Room," and I told them, "Hey, please, will you? I'm a beggar. I'm really good at begging." Yeah. And I was like, "Hey, great, if you could help us out, we're trying to do this. If you tag us, we'd really appreciate it. We're just trying to build the community of comedy if you want to show up."
Love it.
But I went to tattoo shops, which were way more receptive.
Yeah.
And
counterculture spots really like counterculture.
Yeah.
And
dispensaries.
It makes, dispose also. I think that they're like, there's like a, they see it as like, this is a cool factor.
Yeah.
Whereas I think that sometimes more mainstream venues and like businesses and establishments are like, this is noise, you know, right? And I'm like,
stab one out of 100 that they're gonna see that day.
Right.
And in my case, I went up, I was like, I'm trying to look for owners. I'm not trying to look for corporations or anything. I'm trying to look for people who own this spot. And I ran into a lot, which I'm very lucky. And then fortunately, I'm kind of on over by where Tinker Air Force Base is. So there's a lot of veteran owned.
Mm-hmm.
And then Bamboo Room is veteran owned.
Love that.
So we can kind of like pair those two together.
Yeah.
And in your case, I went to 39th Street, which is our...
It's very close. Actually, like within walking distance is the gay district of Oklahoma.
Oh, we love that.
The kind of main strip, as they call it.
This is where Pride happens.
Yeah.
I didn't know OKC has a gay bar.
Yeah.
Nice. A couple. Well, but no, it's went over there, talked to a few people, and tried to build it up. But I think I did it too early.
Mm-hmm.
And then it kind of got washed out. As
I struggle
far as, like,
with that too.
Yeah, 3 weeks ago is when I did it. I was like, and then that's you said two.
Like two. I also want to be the person that's like, I did it a month ahead and now it's done.
Yeah.
And that isn't working. Mm-hmm. And so as much as it is more stressful to me to kind of wait for my efforts, I have found that the return on that is better, because that's when people make plans.
So you think about 2 weeks.
Yeah, because like if people, right, if you do it 2 weeks, people see it like, let's say like 10 days in advance. And like, that's enough time for them to be like, I don't have plans for next week, but it's next week. And so it's on the calendar.
Yeah, it's like it's far enough away they haven't made plans. Because if it's like a week out, and it's like, oh, I'm already doing this thing on Saturday. But if it's like just before that
there's like
marker,
a sweet spot in there.
Sense.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess this is what I'm thinking of for myself. It's like I usually am like booked, you know, but if you catch me about 2 to 3 weeks, I'm definitely have that open.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, usually within those, for me anyways, I'm a photographer, so I'm always at shows every weekend. Right. So I'm very busy with that. But
it's a good way to be busy.
Yeah. I mean, I like it. It gets me to get out, like, cause I'm very like introverted typically. I was like, I've been thinking about this a lot too lately, because it's like I've been doing a lot, and it's like I need to take some of those off, I think.
take
a little bit more
time
for myself, because it is a little bit of burnout. But I think that I'm grateful for that kind of this new career, because it's like it gets me out also.
Yeah, for sure.
And so I'm in the community and making friends, and whereas if I wasn't doing photography, I'd probably just be sitting at home most weekends by myself. But that's cool though. I like that a lot. So what else you got?
You've been doing it for 3 years, which is super cool. To do a whole tour within. Are you pulling other people in and kind
of? Do you have like
other talent and then you're headlining?
Yeah.
How'd you build your sets?
I either host or headline, just because I think that like if I, you know what I mean? If I can pay someone a little extra to host and I can like trust them to kind of keep a room, then that's great. Right. Mm-hmm. And if I don't have that, then I don't want to force that onto a comedian that is not comfortable mm-hmm. with that or is not ready for that, or I can't like trust, but I try not mm-hmm. to like book people I can't trust to do a good
yeah.
job. Right? But it does happen.
Yeah.
And, especially since our talent pool is a little bit shorter, if you will, it's mm-hmm. just smaller, mm-hmm. By nature of it, because mm-hmm. it's like genderqueer people. So, you know, we're thinking like trans folks, we're thinking non-binary folks, and we're thinking drag artists. Mm-hmm. And sometimes there's not, you know, a whole lot of talent in rural areas for that.
Yeah.
And sometimes they are not available, even if they are.
Yeah.
Right? And so, we try to highlight as many local acts as like we can. And I usually try to put at least like 4 other people on a lineup.
Nice. Mm-hmm.
So that way everybody kind of gets like about 10 minutes, and then I'll go up and do like 20, 30 minutes. And that feels like a good show for folks, right?
Yeah.
It's like that 75 minute mark for people.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's like a sweet. Yeah. You know what I mean?
If I get to 90, like, my butt starts to
exactly.
hurt.
Exactly. 90 minutes, you got to pee now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And
that's usually the limit for sure.
Yeah.
It's like
yeah.
90.
After that, I'm tired, you know? And so it feels like that's a good mm-hmm. chunk
yeah.
of time.
Like
I love working with other folks, and it's been really cool to see how much
yeah.
talent there is across the country. And also that, you know, there have been trans people in comedy for a while, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, we've been in this industry kind of the whole time,
mm-hmm.
but not necessarily being called that, or not
yeah.
necessarily being allowed into a lot of club spaces.
Or just people may not know. I mean,
exactly. And then, right, there's just kind of the actual competitiveness
yeah.
of the industry itself, right? Even if you're just a cis, straight, whatever,
mm-hmm.
the guy, you know, and you're super funny, it's still really difficult, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, I think that is like a piece of it. There's oftentimes clubs that say, you know, like, oh, we would love to book you. Could you just not talk about being trans?
Mm-hmm.
We only want to book clean sets. And I'm like, I can give you a clean 20,
yeah.
but it's going to also be about me
it's
being
like,
trans. And they're like, then
you
that's
are.
Not a clean set. And so there's this concept that queerness is
mm-hmm.
inherently taboo. And that kind of stays as a block for a lot of people in their commercial careers. Mm-hmm. And it is both, I get it. And it is also
mm-hmm.
censorship. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
it's
yeah.
it can be both.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I'd say that that's, like, a factor in
I mean,
it as well. So.
To me, it's like you can't tell a black person not to talk about being black. You know
right.
what I mean? Like,
you know, but we certainly tried in early comedy
yeah,
years, right?
I guess that's
with folks on TV. They would, you know, we would often kind of penalize performers
mm-hmm.
for even like bringing up race. And I mean, if you're looking
yeah.
at some of the comics that we know to be really critical in that comedy culture, I would say Eddie Murphy. If you look at like
mm-hmm.
some of the early Eddie Murphy sets, like before kind of Eddie Murphy Raw or like
yeah.
anything like that, before he was able to kind of have that freedom, I think that you can see that he goes on TV and that is squeaky clean.
Yeah.
It is a very clean set with very light,
mm-hmm.
you know, kind of like race jokes that are clearly to not make people, white folks,
yeah.
really uncomfortable, right?
Right?
Which I think is both a skill and also a handicap to
mm-hmm.
performers. You know,
yeah.
it's a hurdle that you kind of have to give up time to get over.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's the beautiful thing about comedy. The thing I love and is you're telling your story.
Yes.
And your story, I mean, that's a very big part of what you are. And to take that away is to, I mean, you're taking away the ability for somebody to see themselves in you, too.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And so that just being able to see, oh, I could do that, or
yeah.
just, oh, it's accepted. I mean, immediately, as soon as you give this person the comfortability, they feel like they're a part of it.
Yes.
And that's storytelling.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Just sitting around a fire talking shit.
100%. And I think yeah. that's why I also fell in love with comedy so hard, too, is that
yeah.
I was shocked that a room full of dude bros that were going up saying really transphobic jokes just moments
mm-hmm.
before, like, I'll go on stage and I'll, you know, reframe some jokes a little bit differently. I really try to not like punch down on people or just kind of be super roasty or critical. It's not really my style.
Mm-hmm.
And then after, you know, kind of being on stage, I'll see the shift in the room, like as it happens, and watch the shift in people's jokes that they think
mm-hmm.
are going to work better for a crowd because they see that, you know, maybe they're responsive to something that's more of a backhanded compliment than
mm-hmm.
it is like a front-handed punch in the face, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And like, I think that that's really beautiful. And then also just hearing comics come up to me afterwards and be like, wow, like that was really, you know, I didn't really think about this before, or like whatever. Like, it is so hard to find people that are more willing to change their mind because comedians see, well, funny's funny.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so if it works, suddenly there's kind of a new avenue to be like, oh, maybe there's a different way to tell this joke. Mm-hmm. Or like, I hadn't really, you know, seen that kind of energy work yeah. super well mm-hmm. before. And they'll just adapt to it. And a lot of places and a lot of art cultures are not so fluid or willing to like grow, you know, in the community. And I saw that in comedy and I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. like,
you can see it change in real time.
Yeah, this is so cool. And also that like, yeah, it was like for the love of the art. It wasn't even anything, you know what I mean? Anything like performative or even ethical, which is, you know, debatable or whatever. But like, it's not that they're like, I want to be a better person, so I'm going to tell a less mean joke. They're just like, oh, but that worked.
Yeah, that's what it is.
You know?
Really yeah. It's like, oh, I'm going to change my bait.
Exactly, exactly. And like, I love that that yeah. is the case.
So
honestly.
How's your approach when you, so say you're coming into maybe a more rural or conservative area, mm-hmm. you're, as far as like audiences, you can come in, the idea is connection, and then you kind of tweak around that. Okay, yeah. I can see where they are, you know.
Yeah.
But how do you approach it from, say, someplace you're comfortable and someplace you're not comfortable?
I mean, honestly, I think it's the same. I think that my process is kind of like, okay, like how much time do I have? And always, Denver is a very punchy city, and that's where I came up in comedy. Mm. And so... I always have in the back of my head, like, what's our word count? What's our, you know, kind of what's our, our like jokes per minute? Like, what's our, you know what I mean? Kind of our
they're,
metrics around
very
laughter.
Like, structured,
yeah.
I guess. Yeah.
And
bit.
Then, so like kind of having that in mind, thinking about my time and what would fill that time. And then out of that, I try to just pick the things that I need to pick at least like three fence posts, if you will, of jokes that like, even if they're not A jokes yet, even if they might be a risk for that audience, if that is the joke that I want to tell, if that is the silly that I have in me that wants to be silly that day, then I have to do it. Because if I don't, then there's kind of this other creative part of me that's just like, well, now we're going to do nothing.
Yeah. Well, it's
you
like,
know?
It
and
comes
so it's
through
like,
in
I
the performance somewhat.
Yeah, yeah. And so I need to get find my silly. Yeah. What do I want today that's silly? Yeah. Like tonight, I was just like, I don't know. Are they going to like the Clitler bit? I don't know, but we're gonna run it.
I already like it.
It's a fun one. I really love that joke. And so, right, just thinking about what do I want to run? And then I like to do my research. So as much as I think that there is a beauty to a really rehearsed and structured set, I think that to not be so canned, I like to reserve a little space for a really lovely comic in Denver, John Novosad, who if you ever get the pleasure of working with, I really recommend you do so. He's such a class act, and he's such a fun, goofy guy, and he's also just a brilliant writer. He does often a piece in his sets, and he'll announce it where he's like, and today, and now it is time for our daily bit, you know, like it's like, this is the daily paper, you know, essentially, and he'll just kind of recount little things that he wrote right before his set or things from that day or things about the room.
Yeah, yeah.
And he will literally place it in the set. And I think that is, and even the announcement of it, he finds a cute, charming way to do it. And I love that. And I think that is a wonderful tactic to not be so canned, is to give yourself just that 60 to 120 seconds to be like, I found out about Oklahoma State Bird, and here's a thing about wine, and you know what I mean? Like, what is the room that I'm in? Where am I at regionally? What am I noticing? Or even like, what did I do today? You know, I was at a show, one of my last headline sets, I had like went to an amusement park earlier in the day, and I did a bit just about being on an amusement park and not knowing what my scream sounds like because I hadn't been on a roller coaster for 10 years.
Yeah.
And, and so that's my funny. Scream used to be a teenage girl scream.
Yeah.
And now we are an adult man. And so what is that? And like, they loved it. And it was a really great bit concept.
No,
and
I
needed to
thought. I mean, because I don't
breathe,
obviously, it's like, I mean, as a straight cis man, like I never don't think too much about the transitioning, but then that part of it, very specific thing, is very funny to think about.
Same, right? And like, so it was cool to kind of have space within a set to just air that out. Even if the punches weren't quite there yet, they could tell it was fresh, but the concept was still funny. It gave an element of like nowness to my performance and to just the, you know, kind of the room. And I think that giving, you know, don't make it your whole set. Don't go off on a 10-minute tangent that you haven't tested at a show, you know, but if you have like a couple little and you're like, ooh, I thought of this on the way, you know, give yourself space to do them in between your actual bits. And I would say, bookend them with strong bits.
Yeah.
So if I go in with an A bit and then I kind of give myself that little two minutes to do, you know, whatever, especially if you have the time, you know, if you're like lucky enough to have a feature or headline set, give yourself those minutes and then be able to bookend it with like, all right, and here's another really good zinger for you, and pick them back up in case it absolutely bombs.
That's a good, it's definitely a good like kind of structure for that, because we talk to a lot of comics, I mean, mostly comics that are from here, but we know quite a few comics that will do that kind of similar thing, but maybe not so structured in that same way. That's something about what you mentioned about Denver. Like, what's it like doing comedy in Denver? I don't know if you've done comedy. I mean, I've obviously performed comedy in other places, but what are kind of the differences? Like you mentioned, they're very like structured in that, like, you know, the timing and word count.
Fast punch city for sure.
Interesting. Yeah. I don't know. I guess we've never really talked to Denver comics yet.
underrated. There's a tremendous amount of amazing talent coming out of
Denver.
It's
a great music town. I know that.
Yes, yeah. Really, really vibrant in the arts.
Mm-hmm. I know Joe Barnholt. I think he's up there. Have you met him?
I don't know.
I met him at Tower City.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Lovely. I was supposed to go to Tower City and I couldn't make it out. Because I was just like, oh no. I was like, it's okay. I'll fly out. And then I was like, there's no airport. And then I was like, oh no, and there's an airport, but it's 5 hours away, and then I would have to drive, and then I would have to rent a car, and then I was just like, last minute, I was like, I'm so sorry, it's the only festival that I've ever like basically dipped on, and I'm sad about it, because I loved
it. Was a good
Texas.
Time. It was a good time. Yeah, I promise you were missed. Yes. So you were saying, how it's punchy there, and how it's different in other places?
Oh gosh, you know, I'd say, there's a lot of crossover and similarities between scenes, and that... Mm-hmm. Most of them are very white dude and bro. Yeah. Most of them, you know, really enjoy, like, they are built on comic culture, which is not necessarily centered around what audiences actually like. And comics really like dark stuff, and they really like roasty stuff, and so do I, right? Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I think that there is a cynicism that gets in people's way when it's purely comic built, and because the audience also wants whimsy. Right. And we can't forget to kind of bring that cute silliness. You can't just like go up there and be cool and be funny and mean. You know what I mean? It's like, no, they also want to be given the permission to be silly with you. Right. Mm-hmm. And so I think that that's a thing between like Denver and other spots, both a pro and a con. It is not very friendly to storyteller comedians. People want one-liners. That is what is prized, especially in, you know, we have a good number of comedy clubs. We have a lot of really wonderful, like I call them kind of mid-range shows of like brewery shows and bar shows. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, we're at a cidery and we're at a, you know, I don't know, right? Like, it's a cool underground barbershop show, like stuff like that, right? Which is great. And I really love those types of venues. And so I think that storytellers can have an edge there coming up there because like if you learn to be a storyteller comic in a fast punch city, you do very well in other cities.
Yeah, you can kind of,
people are like, wow, you wove that together so well. And you're like, oh my God, I've been sweating trying to like plug punchlines into that for like a year.
It's
so much
harder to practice that there. So you're probably going to get better at it there. Yeah, that's interesting.
But Denver does a wonderful job of cranking out amazing comedy writers because people want fresh content and they want fast content.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we're seeing... Hannah Jones and Sammy Anser are just amazing. Lee Robinson, we just lost to New York. Love you, Lee. Similarly, they're just incredible. Chanel Hughes, I swear, is gonna blow up. I think that she's one of the funniest people I've ever seen. She's so good. So good, so funny. So just builds audience rapport like no other. And so there's a lot of Sam Elfson, also great comic, and like there's just too many to name because we're pulling out really really good people and oftentimes we're losing them to New York and LA, which makes sense. Shout out BK, I love you, we miss you. I'd say that like it's nice, it's very competitive, but there is still a warmness to the scene. All scene has drama, everybody has a club that they have beef with, like that's pretty standard across like scene by scene. That's what makes it interesting.
We've got like five
sometimes.
People here, so it's like, we just take turns.
Nice. Take turns hating each other. Denver City is that way too. That's right, just a bigger community. But I think that those are kind of the defining things of Denver. I wish that we're starting to get more and more out of town people that come and tour through. and I wish that we were more welcoming to it, because it would benefit our scene as well, for other folks to know that there's such good work coming out of the state.
Something that, I mean, that we don't hear too much about Denver. I mean, especially because, like we were talking about, it's not that far from Oklahoma City. Mm-mm. I mean, and we hear all the time about Austin, and, you know, obviously, I mean, Austin is huge now, I think, for comedy, but I mean, it's, that's pretty fairly close to here too. So a lot of people go down there to try it out, you know, and go for a week or whatever and try out some of the clubs. But Denver is like another place. It's like we should check, you know, more of us should go up there. And
so many mics, so many opportunities to get on stage, so many shows, and so many amazing comedians to really learn from. And there's scenes kind of all up and down the state, because Colorado Springs has their own thing. Exactly. Denver has their own thing. And Fort Collins kind of has their own thing. Mm-hmm. And we also share a lot of comics because they're only about an hour apart.
Yeah, you can do multiple.
Yeah, little, real quick time.
Exactly.
I mean, similar to here in Tulsa, honestly. Yeah, we do a lot.
So your sister still lives there, right?
Yeah.
We'll be down there.
That's what I was going to say. We need to make a trip up there before long.
Come through. There's a lot happening, and I'm surprised at how good the content is very consistently. And I'm very proud to have come up in the Denver scene. Mm-hmm. Even though it is like hard and competitive and has its own toxicity, as all scenes do. Mm-hmm. I'm definitely proud to have come up around those other comedians I really admire.
Nice.
That's awesome.
Steel sharpens steel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. The best way.
That's right.
Don't get me wrong. We got 20 people here. It's not fun. Okay.
Yeah. The scene is decent. Yeah. I mean, like I was telling you earlier, it's 10, 15 years ago, we played music, and it was kind of a stronger scene. I feel like that's kind of died off. The band scenes kind of went away, but the comedy scenes almost replaced it in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I think so.
And it's that's kind of growing up now, whereas 10, 15 years ago, I mean, there wasn't hardly any comics. I mean, we had barely one club.
There really was only five people.
It's one comedian at a Derek mixed mic Smith. That happens once in a while.
I mean, that's the thing is, as you know, I've always been in the entertainment scene in a ways with music, and it's I only knew two comedians my whole life, you know, until recently.
I used to watch. I used to go and watch shows, local shows, and they would bring people in. Brad Chad. And
there's a few that have been around for a long time, but even then, it's they were all at the one at the Looney Bin in Tulsa. I mean, not Tulsa, but here.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But then it shut down.
Yeah. Sad. So it's if you weren't in that community, you know, you didn't know anything about what was going on with the comedy scene. But now I feel like it has. It's kind of maybe a good thing that club closed in some ways, because it's spread people out, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it's a lot more DIY now. Yeah. This episode of Rhythm and Wit was brought to you by Campbell & Son Electric, Oklahoma City's trusted one-truck electrical contractor with over 20 years of experience in the field. Whether it's upgrading your home's electrical service, troubleshooting issues, or tackling small commercial projects, Campbell & Son Electric delivers top-notch work with care and attention you'd expect from a family business. Servicing areas like Dell City, Edmond, Yukon, Mustang, and beyond, they're your go-to for reliable expert service. Need help with your next project? Visit CampbellAndSonElectric.com today and get it done right the first time. Campbell & Son Electric, brightening Oklahoma, one wire at a time.
So
that's what I was asking. It's so you have these mid-tier kind of little bar shows and stuff like that. How are they received as far as the audience? Are they forward-facing, paying attention, or are they drinking with you in the background?
You know, it really depends on the show. I would say that, you know, we had when we were in Reno, it was called Carl's Saloon. I love Carl's Saloon. Yeah. Man, that was such a great place. I was this was awesome. We had these cuties come in, and they were out of chairs, and so homies just started sitting on the floor, and you got kind of your bar flies that were we'll stick around for the show. Mm-hmm. And they're just drinking at the bar, and it was a lot of, you know, dare I say, hecklers, but they were it's a polite heckling where they're just clearly excited to be there and be involved with the show. And I love that. I love when the vibe is just we're drinking together, and a bunch of people were dressed up as pirates, and I was what's going on? We're in a landlocked state. What's happening? Right. And they were just it's the testicle festival. And I was so naturally you're dressed as a pirate? you know what I mean? And so we get to have this really fun, it's not even a joke. It was just a conversation. And that was great.
So
and
cap-wise. So,
right? And so that was really wonderful. And then there's other shows we were lucky enough to get to be at Theater N in Wilmington, Delaware, And gosh, we packed that room with like 150 people. And it was this massive theater and it was just gorgeous. And it just really felt like you were in like a big multi-tier, you know, theater, and there's people laughing everywhere and you can't even like see them. And even still, I think that through that, I was still trying to find kind of almost that smaller pub show energy. Yeah. Where, you know, you're even talking about it earlier, you're like, I gotta see them through my glasses, otherwise you're not getting me.
They're not even real.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And getting to do that. And there was like, I like asked, like, where are my allies in the crowd? And one person was just like, ally, from the back. And I was like, ally, you know, it was like very cute.
I didn't mean to single you out.
Yeah, literally. And like, it was, yeah. But I just love when you can reach out and connect with people and have the courage to do it.
We all love put a cork in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're right there.
That's very,
I'm so
small room, but yeah, it'll be nice.
So do you have do you help support this with a job at home, or are you just on the road?
Yeah, I work full time. So I'm fortunate enough to work remotely and get to travel for work as well. Right. I do sports advocacy. So I help write policies for LGBTQ athletes to keep them safe in sports. And we do kind of pride events and stuff and consult on, you know, kind of... someone said something homophobic and now NASCAR's like, you can't do that. You know, and so then like, who do they have to talk to? It's probably me.
Yeah.
Which is nice. And I actually really love doing those types of kinds of trainings and things, because I'm not trying to be like, you need to learn this vocabulary, otherwise you're an asshole. It's like, no, I'm trying to just be like, you're, you know, a person and I'm going to make you laugh. I'm going to make you my best friend.
Yeah.
And then I don't want you to like look like an idiot. So maybe you should learn some of this stuff so you don't look dumb again. And also, I'm trans, and now you have to deal with that on a personal level, because we just spent 2 hours together, and now I think you like me as a friend. And so here we are. Like, and usually I see people like shift quite quickly, and it's interesting. It's a lot of the same skills as doing comedy.
That's interesting. Yeah,
it's kind of like the room you're in whenever you're doing comedy. Yeah. And things change around you. Bingo. It's accepting. Exposure.
Exactly.
We talk about that all the time. It's like comedy is just trying to convince someone else's of your thoughts and your, you know, convince somebody that you're right about whatever you're feeling or thinking. So it's like exactly the same thing.
Yeah, you're like trying to.
Change kind people's of
subtly,
minds.
Be like, adopt this mindset.
Yeah.
I mean, if it were this for you?
Yeah. It's just trying to put somebody in your shoes, I think. Yeah.
Mine's more like, my kids are mean, right?
Yeah.
Right? I'm not the only one.
Yeah. You're just trying to validate your thoughts.
Please, somebody tell me I'm not crazy.
I love having like I know what you're thinking. I use that all the time in like premises where like I'll like kind of set up something ridiculous and be like, I know what you're thinking, and then say something even more surreal and ridiculous.
Yeah.
Because there's no way that they're actually thinking that. And I think that is a really fun kind of hack frame for a joke. And I think that's also how I try to approach comedy, where it's like, I'm like, see, we were all thinking this absolutely asinine thought at the same time. Yeah. And now you're thinking it, so you can't tell me wrong. You know what I mean? Like, and people seem to get a kick out of that, right? I think that it's like kind of an unexpected form of connection. Mm-hmm. And it's easy to do a context shift type joke in that.
So how do you write? What's your writing process?
Oh my gosh. My writing process is to keep writing trash. If you can't write, if you are afraid to write a bad joke, there's no way that you are going to be confident enough to write a good bad joke.
Yes,
right? Like you need to be able to it's called a train of thought. So you have to take all the trash with, and then you get the gold at the end too. You know what I mean? So I think it's truly just keep writing. I do my pages. I'm diligent about doing my like 3 pages a day. I don't do them in the timely morning way that you're supposed to do. I also don't drink a smoothie in the morning and I'm supposed to, you know what I mean? Like, it's fine, but just do it.
When
you know what I mean?
Like, done.
Do it when you can. Point, yeah. I, you know, love to, I was not a funny kid. I was not a lot of people are like, I was always the class clown. And I was like, nope, I was always the punching bag. So I got very good experience of being the punchline and figuring out, like, in my little autistic brain, like, how can I be funny like those people? How can I make the premise and not just be the punchline, or change their premise so that I shift it back to them or like whatever.
Have like a comeback or whatever.
In the wise words of Steve Martin, you know, whatever level of talent you have, it can be overcome. Yes, and I really believe that, where, you know, you people sometimes say like, you need a knack for it, you need a skill for it, and sure, that can be helpful, but like, you can learn this. Right. You can learn weird social tact rules that don't make sense and deconstruct them and figure out why it makes sense and then apply it until it becomes a little bit more natural for you. Mm-hmm. And I believe that to my core. So I write down anything that I think is funny, literally. I mean, like, it was like terrible. I'm like literally going to pull up the last thing that I wrote down in my stream of consciousness notebook. You know how British people say Z instead of Z?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I feel like that's, I don't know. Like, I love that like Brits gave Z a name, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, why'd you do that? Like, it's like, I feel like they, you know, they just love letters, probably. They're just throwing in that European U everywhere they go to, you know what I mean? They're like, it's our favorite thing to do. XYZ, you know, and I'm just like, y'all just throwing these letters
extra
around.
Letters,
yeah, exactly. And so just like, right, I'm like, that's a funny concept that could use like punchlines. And so
take that and stream it.
Exactly. So I'll write down anything that is funny, even if it doesn't make sense why it's funny, just write it down. There's something in it. And then I love to use the, I believe it is Sally Holloway's Hadron Joke Collider method, which is basically you take that and then take kind of any other random thing, or, you know, even just taking kind of two of those keywords, so like British and letters, and then doing a mind map or a list around it.
Oh, okay.
And then you try to find if there are anything that is the same.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's not, then, you know, you can also take one thing from one mind map and pair it against another thing of another mind map and try to find any surrealist bridge, any extravagant kind of like way that I can connect these two things, even if it doesn't make sense, where it's like balloons and dinosaurs and I'm like, gosh, that must have looked so silly if a T-Rex was holding a balloon, you know what I mean? Like, even that is enough to get
that's almost
something,
like,
right?
I like that. What is it called?
I really recommend the book Advanced Joke Writing by Sally Holloway, and it is probably the best joke writing book I've ever read. And I in it is the Hadron Joke Collider, among a lot of other different like frameworks for how to actually write jokes and more of a find jokes.
Yeah.
I love that. It is a way to be like, how can I find the connections, or how can I build a bridge between these two things, even if it's ridiculous.
I think that that's like almost like the best, like you're saying, that is like the best joke. If you can make a joke out of a T-Rex holding a balloon, and I mean, that's like putting two absurd ideas together and making it work is like one of the best things you can do, I feel like.
Yeah, and I think that you have to give yourself permission to be silly and stupid, because if you can't do that for yourself as a writer or on stage, how can you expect audience members to mirror you in being able to let their guard down and be silly and stupid and laugh and like have a stupid laugh and laugh really hard at your joke? You know what I mean? Like, I think that you have to open that up for yourself first. Yeah. So yeah, I love to use that method. I think that writing on, you know, I definitely have the dream of being a writer on a show. As much as I love writing for myself and performing, I love writing for other people.
Yeah.
So are you an author as well?
Yeah. So I've written a couple plays and gotten to produce them, which was really cool back in West Virginia too. So it was,
Cause you
really
mentioned
neat.
Acting, right? Yeah. That's what I was going to ask. I mean, that answers the question I was thinking of. What other kind of creative hobbies did you have? Maybe before comedy.
Oh, gosh, too much.
Yeah.
Too many.
That's awesome.
Love music. Yeah. Grew up a piano player. Okay. I play like six or so instruments, and I like, not well, certainly,
but you tried
just
everything. Yeah.
Garage band at all, baby. Oh, yeah. Revolutionary garage band as a teenager. truly. Does not get the credit it deserves. and I am a recent kind of more amateur photographer.
Yeah.
I did a lot of kind of video work in like kind of the 2010s or so. And I'm getting back into that now and basically relearning kind of more industry standards there, but really enjoying just kind of a point and shoot camera and getting a feel for four different lenses and four different camera bodies and what that is. I've published like three poetry books that are all really sappy poetry. but I love that. I love writing sappy poetry. And so even, you know what I mean? Like, I think that like being able to write sappy poetry is part of the reason I'm able to do comedy now.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. Because if you can get over the fact that, like, you know what? So what if your art is cringe?
Mm-hmm.
Put it out there.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and I did, and some of it is I can barely stand to look at it, and other pieces I'm like, you know what? That was, like, really, really good. And then having random people, like, I don't know, occasionally buy the book and hit me up that I don't know and send me a message and be like, this one poem really spoke to me or something. And I'm just so I'm like, you know what? Who cares if it's cringe, if it spoke to you? You know what I mean? Think that's great.
That's like with that kind of stuff for sure. But I mean, any art that we make, it's like you might look at it and be like, oh, this is trash, this is garbage, but you know, you made it. But then someone else looks at it and sees something completely different based on their perspective.
And I think that is such a critical point to get to in comedy as well, is that you have to try it out, even if you think it is bad or stupid, because you don't know what's funny. You don't. You can kind of theorize around it, you can, you know, build stuff around it, but you don't know what is good comedy. The audience knows. And so to trust them for that, and like some of the, you know, gosh, I have a couple jokes that like I wrote and I was like, this is terrible. This is never going to get a laugh. And I go in and I'm almost like poo-pooing it before I even get there. And I'm putting on a weird attitude about it. And it's still got a giggle.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Really? You know, and then I if it gets a giggle, I force myself to workshop it. Yeah. Because if there's a kernel of funny in there, I want to find it, you know? Yeah. And I think that is a big piece to get to, is like, you don't know what's funny. And so you really do have to try everything out. Mm-hmm. And I do very much believe that like we find jokes more than we make them. Mm-hmm. You know, they kind of already exist, and it's just you finding a connection of it.
Yeah. And homage to the muse. That's what I feel like. That's what the pages are for me. It's I'll get up in the morning writing this. I'm doing this for you. Give me something back later.
For sure.
But there's there's some of them where I have a few jokes where I don't even know why that's funny.
Yeah,
like where you're like, why is this funny? Well, it works. I'm gonna keep doing it. It's like, let me get to this real quick. So who are some of your favorites, comedians that you grew up on?
Comedians that I grew up on. Yeah. Oh man,
help inspired you?
Colin Mochrie for sure. Yeah. I was a big Who's Line kid.
Yeah,
and just his sense of whimsy and open-mindedness, and like I'm not even necessarily so much of an improv or sketch person, but that style of comedy was it's something I still go back to, and it was really enjoyable for me. Like, God, there was one joke where it was like kind of the first political joke I ever got as a kid, if you will, where they were like, the prompt was like, what is George W. Bush thinking right now? And in like, I mean, you know, of course, movie magic, right? They may have been thinking about this for longer, but it looked like Colin Mochrie just went right up on stage and he goes, there's not even a cabinet in here. And I was like, that is so funny. That was so amazing. Like, oh, that was just amazing.
That was a show. I remember watching that show a lot as a kid because, like, my mom loved that show so much. She loved Drew Carey, though. It was like huge Drew Carey fan.
Yeah. Grew up with a lot of huge Drew Carey fans. Colin Mochrie was probably my favorite comic as like a kid. Nice. And then Robin Williams, Steve Martin, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
When I became a teenager, I got a little bit more exposed to, I was a big Dave Chappelle fan as a teenager. Mm-hmm. He was kind of part of the reason I got into comedy, and...
Sorry, I got some in my eye.
Never Forgiven. Dave Chappelle, Eddie Murphy was a really big one for me, and kind of seeing his evolution as a comedian. And now I think of both kind of comics that are alive and very, very old school comics are things that I really gravitate towards. So Paris Sachet out of DC and Kiana Scott out of Atlanta are some of my favorite comics right now because they really just connect to an audience so well. And then as far as kind of like icons for me is like absolutely Moms Mabley, who if you don't know about, you should know about. Moms absolutely Mabley. One of the most premier comedians of her time. Was known as the funniest woman in the world as a like openly queer like black comedian in touring the Jim Crow South.
Okay, whoa.
And still reached that level of acclaim, and the jokes still hold up. Like there was a I was just watching a really great bit of hers on a TV show, and she was running a bit that was kind of common in her sets, which was about being set up with men. Mm-hmm. And she was talking about how, like, oh, God, he was so ugly. He was so ugly, it hurt my feelings. That joke is 80 years old, fam, still giggle. It's so good. And with her delivery and her just incredible sense of self, looking like this kind of funny grandma on stage, where you're like, mm-hmm. who let this, you know, kind of like lady on stage? And she just would have a crowd roaring.
Yeah.
And to do so in a field that is built for you to not succeed, mm-hmm. In spaces that are literally illegal for you to go to,
mm-hmm.
and creating space for your community that way and earning that type of title, like, mm-hmm. that's what I want to be when I grow up. That's amazing, right? Yeah, really, really definitely. Great joke writing.
It's similar to what you were saying earlier. It's like you're taking something that's not accepted by many people and you're changing their minds. You know, I think that's kind of what you're doing now. What I feel like
you're on your way.
That is the
you're
hope
in Oklahoma City right now.
Oklahoma City. I was so excited. I had a great time in Tulsa, and so I was just like, I'm so excited. Like, it's a pop around and be in like new city. I don't know.
Yeah,
happy to have you back in Oklahoma for sure.
Yeah, well, thanks so much.
Oh my gosh,
let them know where
great.
You're,
yeah,
where they can find you.
Oh my gosh, all the things. Well, I've been like looking behind me, like, you over there. That's funny. Hi guys, hilarious. You can find me all over the internet at RenQ Comedy on all the social platforms. RenQComedy.com for all the things. HereToPee.com and at HereToPee if you want to come see a show in one of our upcoming 23 states.
Yes.
And we'll be in the north in August, and we'll be in the south in November. And besides that, I don't know. You can find me all, you know, postering my face and my shows, and occasionally a thirsty, you know, photo on the internet.
There you go.
Nice.
Yeah. Just like just anything on Instagram, really.
Right. I was gonna say pretty much all of that is on Instagram.
Yeah, I gotta start doing more thirsty posts. You know?
I see people doing where they're like little ab, little booby, you know, and then like immediate next post is like, here are my shows for July.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's brilliant.
Yeah,
I want to show my hairy bagel. That's what I'm going to do. But yeah, thanks so much for coming.
Yeah,
oh my gosh,
this was
great.
Excited for the show this evening. And, thanks, guys, for watching.
Yeah,
we appreciate
it.
We'll
see
you on the next
one. Thanks.
That was amazing. We did it. Cute. That was great.